It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Lead. It's in the drinking water, even though it's been 30 years since the EPA passed a law banning the use of lead for piping nationwide. And it's in paint, even though lead paint was banned in 1978. Why did we end up with lead piping and lead paint in the first place? What are the challenges to removing it? And why is it still causing problems today? These are just some of the questions we have for reporters Irina Zhorov and Eleanor Klimanoff, who've helped put together a series of reports for Keystone Crossroads on the problems caused by lead and what can be done to solve them. Irina Zhorov joins us in studio. Good day, Irina.
Good afternoon.
And Eleanor Klimanoff is with us by phone from State College, PA. Hello, Eleanor.
Hello.
Irina, we'll begin with you since lead levels in water is certainly in the headlines of late, and as we just heard on an NPR newscast. How widespread is lead in Pennsylvania drinking water infrastructure?
Very widespread, but I can't give you any numbers, and that's because we don't know where the lead is. The EPA estimates that we have maybe between 6 and 11 million service lines, and just to clarify, most of the lead lines are service lines, and those are the pipes that run from the water main, which goes down the middle of a street, to the individual homes and buildings. So it's the smaller lines that connect to individual buildings, and most of them... So most of the lead is in the service lines. We have no exact number for how many there are in Pennsylvania.
And is the problem, as Jim Good of the PWSA characterized it when he was with us on the program here, is the problem with lead coming from the pipes, or are the lead levels in the water significant?
Yeah, so lead is a little different than some of the other contaminants we have in the water. Some of the other ones may come in from, say, the river where we get our water, or, you know, when the water goes through the treatment facility, maybe it's not fully treated when it comes out. Those things they test for at the treatment facility. Lead gets into the water from the actual pipes. So even if it's good from the river or the reservoir, wherever you get your water, and even if it's good after it's treated, once it goes through the main towards your house through that service line, that's where it would pick it up. It would be leached out of the pipes. So it's a little different in that respect.
Why was lead so widely used for piping in the first place?
It was a good material. It was really malleable. It lasted a really long time. It would come in these big rolls, and you know, the people installing it, they would unroll it into the ditch that they dug from the main to the house. And once they covered it up with dirt, even as the dirt settled and shifted, the lead would just shift with it, and it wouldn't break like some of the other materials would. So it's a little more expensive than some of the materials available at the time, but it lasted a longer time. It didn't break. It didn't crack. Some of the lead lines that we have now, they've been in the ground for 100 years, and you know, they're still working pretty well. So it was actually seen as a good engineering choice back then.
Yeah, so great. But then there's a problem. It's poisoning the water. When did folks begin to realize that it was a problem?
There were actually doctors both here and in Europe who in the 1800s started saying, well, wait a minute, we have these
cases. The 1800s?
Yeah, they were saying, you know, we have these cases of lead poisoning. The problem was they had kind of bigger concerns at the time. We had typhoid fever. We had cholera. All of those things were pretty quickly and effectively solved once we started building water systems. And, you know, at that point, like, who cares if it's lead? We're getting rid of typhoid fever. The other thing is these doctors that were coming forward and saying, you know, maybe lead is a problem, they didn't have good data. They had case studies. They had good qualitative data, but that wasn't really enough to convince people that really we needed to overhaul and like reconsider this really big thing that we were trying to do as a society, which is build water systems.
But the data got better, and at some point people knew better than to condone the use of lead for pipes. So when that happened, the industry then fought back. Describe how this all manifested itself.
Yeah, so, you know, the industry started seeing these reports coming out where people were saying, hey, maybe lead is not a good idea, especially in these areas where maybe the water was more corrosive and so more lead got into the water.
And this would have been around when?
Early 1900s. And so in the 1920s, the Lead Industries Association, which was basically a trade group for anyone who either mined lead or produced paint with lead in it or produced piping or solder with lead, anybody with interest or a stake in lead, they formed the Lead Industries Association and they lobbied. They went from city to city, spoke with government leaders at various levels at the state, federal, local. And they tried to convince them to keep using lead. They said lead is a very durable material. You should keep using it. And even municipalities that by that time had decided to move away from lead and work with different materials, in some cases they were able to convince them to come back to lead. So this group was active into the 70s. As late as 1938, they were announcing at their annual meeting that, in Pennsylvania, they successfully were able to pass ordinances that required the use of lead pipes in cities everywhere in PA.
But eventually, the EPA passed a law in 1986, in fact, banning the use of lead for piping nationwide. That's relatively recent. Were people using it up to that point?
It had people had sort of organically moved away from lead by that point. Some people use 1930 as kind of the turning point and say in their cities there was no more lead after that. Philadelphia uses 1950 as the point where they consider no new lead was installed. In Chicago, for example, in 1986, there was a newspaper article where the plumbing union was still saying that lead is the material we should be using. So it really varied by locality. But like I said, it was sort of an organic move away from it. They started using copper and they started using plastic now. That's what's primarily used. But it varied.
And how many remain? Lead pipes?
We don't know. So I think EPA estimates 6 to 11 million nationwide. Nobody really keeps track of where the lead pipes are. So we know that there are many, especially in older cities, but we don't have exact numbers.
Are there lead replacement programs in Pennsylvania?
Not really. Eleanor can talk a little more about what was done with paint, but with lead pipes, not so much. Other states do have them. For example, Madison, Wisconsin, they replaced all their lead lines, and there was some assistance. They reimbursed homeowners for that expense to, I think, halfway. But Pennsylvania, as far as I know, has not had programs like that.
And maybe you've just explained this, but there have been certainly some calls in Flint, Michigan, and beyond to replace all the lead pipes, all of them. What would that actually entail?
That would be a huge undertaking. So for one, we mentioned that in 1986, there was a law banning lead. Well, what it actually did was it said it had a very specific definition for what lead-free meant. For pipes, that meant 8%, right? Not lead-free. For solder, it was a smaller percentage, but there was still like a small amount of lead that was allowed to be there. So, first...
And that's been lowered, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's been lowered. So since 2014, now it's lower than that. It's just a fraction of a percent, for how much lead is allowed. But still, you'd have to make the decision, like, what do you actually want to remove? Things that are all lead? Do you want to remove the stuff that was still allowed by that 1986 law? The other thing, like I mentioned, no one knows where the lead is. So you'd have to go through this massive effort to survey all of the buildings and homes in your community and figure out where is the lead? How much do we have? And then, of course, the final step is the resources. It's really expensive to replace a lead line. They're privately owned in a lot of cities completely, like in Philadelphia. In Pittsburgh, it's half and half. The utility owns half, and then the homeowner owns the other half. So you have to convince the homeowners that it's worth their investment to replace these pipes. And then, like I said, in Madison, there was a reimbursement program. If other cities decide to do that, they'd have to raise the money to actually make that possible.
Water utilities have to test for lead, and the majority pass. What do those results actually mean?
So we talked earlier about how the lead actually gets in the water. It leaches out of the lead pipes into the water.
Right.
So to help control that, the utilities have to have, the EPA requires this, that they have an anti-corrosion plan in place, right? It makes the water less corrosive, less lead gets into the water. So what the testing actually shows is whether that anti-corrosion program is working. Is it effective? So unlike other contaminants where with a certain degree of confidence you can say, you know, the water that leaves the treatment facility is going to be the same as it is in your tap. You know, there's going to be the same number of contaminants and the levels are going to be low. You can't say that with lead. So the testing doesn't show that on a house by house basis. What it's actually showing is whether the anti-corrosion plan is working.
And is this the kind of testing we should be doing here in Pittsburgh?
It's really the only practical thing that the EPA has come up with, right? Because unless you test literally in every single house, and these are private homes, you have to convince people to let you into their homes to test, or, you know, for them to submit a sample. It's really the only thing that EPA has figured out, practically at least.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. I'm talking with reporter Irina Zhuroff, and also now coming up, Eleanor Klibanoff. They've put together a series of reports for Keystone Crossroads on the problems caused by lead and what can be done to solve them. Eleanor Klibanoff, you looked at lead paint. Why was lead used in paint in the first place?
So lead paint was used as an ingredient in paint much for the same reasons it was used in pipes. It's a great ingredient unless you care about lead poisoning. It dries quickly. It's durable. It's a very inexpensive base for paint. So the paint companies could make a lot of paint for a very little amount of money. And it's, you know, you can cover a lot of wall with not that much paint. But over time, they discovered that lead paint was dangerous to children specifically.
And how do children get lead poisoning from lead paint?
So right now, I mean, in 1978, they banned lead as an ingredient in paint, but only about 30% of Pennsylvania's housing stock has been refreshed since then. So think about that, 70% of our homes likely have lead paint on the walls. It's probably buried under layers of non-leaded paint, but when those non-leaded layers of paint, that new paint starts to peel or chip, or if you do renovations or, you know, hammer a nail into the wall, you're going to create paint dust or paint chips. And if children consume those, it's very detrimental to their health. So pretty much any time if you slam a door and a little dust comes out, or you open up your windows and the breeze blows dust by, kids can be ingesting that at dangerous levels.
And I'm guessing from what you're telling us that kids are the most affected by lead paint poisoning.
Definitely. Older people, adults, can get lead poisoning. They tend to get, you know, acute lead poisoning where you ingest a dangerous level of lead all at once, and that can cause coma. You can go into a coma. That can cause death. But what children suffer from usually is chronic lead poisoning, where specifically before the age of 6, while their brains are developing, sort of those crucial years where the blood-brain barrier is developing, and also you're getting those sort of crucial neurological steps of development. Children who consume lead, they see symptoms develop that later on in life will look like ADD or dyslexia, hyperactivity, lower IQ. It's causing these developmental delays that are really later on in life going to cause a lot of problems for children. And, you know, children also are particularly prone to lead poisoning because if your eye saw a wall with chipping paint, you're not going to put that in your mouth. But kids, they put things in their mouth, they put their hands in their mouth, they put dusty toys in their mouths, and lead paint tastes sweet. So a kid who starts picking at a wall that has chipping paint is going to be drawn back to that again and again because it tastes appealing.
If lead paint was banned in 1978, why is this still a problem today? You mentioned that, Eleanor, that the lead-based paint that would have gone on a wall years ago is then painted over. The paint that's on top of that chips away. Is that primarily why it's still a lingering problem, or are there other reasons?
Well, that's really one of the problems. So for years and years, we've just sort of painted over our lead paint problem, and that can temporarily solve the problem. But we still have homes that have a lot of lead paint on the walls, and that is eventually going to become a problem, whether it's for your family today or the next family that moves in and on and on. one of the big problems in Pennsylvania is we don't know where all the lead paint is, not unlike pipes. Pennsylvania is not a mandatory testing state. So, say, in other states like Connecticut, every child gets tested for lead at age 1 and 2. So we can identify who's living in a home that has a lead hazard. Pennsylvania doesn't require that, though there is talk now of legislation to maybe make Pennsylvania a mandatory testing state. But even once you find out where that lead is, even once you test those kids, the question becomes who has to pay to get rid of the lead hazard. It's really, really expensive to do lead abatement. It can cost in the tens of thousands of dollars. And lead paint tends to show up in, or particularly we see the lead paint hazard in the homes of low-income families. They're more likely to live in a home that is less well-maintained. They often can't, they have less housing choice or can't advocate for things like a lead test. And so, you know, if a family receives a bill for $10,000 to remediate the lead in their homes, that's not something every family can afford. And there are, you know, anecdotally, we've heard about landlords who find out about this and just put a family out on the street rather than having to go through the process of the lead remediation.
Mm. Are there lead replacement programs in Pennsylvania?
There's no funding from the state for lead remediation. Over the years, Pennsylvania's had a hodgepodge of grants from HUD and the CDC and the EPA to pay for lead remediation. Right now, some individual cities have funding from HUD for that, but on the state level, all the money is going towards education and these temporary measures, you know, like cleaning supplies to remove the lead dust or a community health nurse who might help the family put the child in a different room that doesn't have peeling paint or remove the child from the danger temporarily until they get past that crucial age of 6. So the funding is going towards education and temporary solutions and not towards full-scale remediation, which is sort of how we've ended up going 40 years without fully removing this lead threat.
And there have been some lawsuits against the paint companies. Is that a source of funding potentially?
Right. That's a really interesting thing that's sort of happening now around lead. And, you know, since lead was banned in 1978 as an ingredient in paint, it's been a slow and plodding process to get rid of this lead hazard that clearly hasn't reached its completion yet. But in 2008, the state of Rhode Island sued the lead paint companies, which are now just paint companies like Sherwin-Williams and Dutch Boy. And they were awarded $4 billion to pay for lead remediation. That case was struck down on appeal, so they didn't receive that money. But there's another case now being considered in California. It's very similar with cities. Cities were awarded $1.2 billion from the lead paint companies. That's still being considered by in an appeals court. But if that ended up being a source of funding, that would be a way for states like Pennsylvania, which has a massive amount of homes built before 1978, to maybe think large scale about remediating that lead hazard once and for all.
I've been talking with reporters Eleanor Klibanoff and Irina Zhorov, who've helped put together a series of reports for Keystone Crossroads on the problems caused by lead and what can be done to solve them. Thanks to both of you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up, pulmonary embolisms have become the nation's third leading cause of death. We'll look at new ways this heart condition is being treated. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.